Captain, we have them. We've established Transporter Lock, the Star Trek Discovery podcast. Join Ken and Sabriel each week as they explore strange new episodes, seek out new plots and new characters, and boldly go where no podcast has gone before.
Hello and welcome to Transporter Lock episode number 94 for March 2022. I'm your co-host, Chief Engineer Ken Gagne, and joining me as always...
I am Captain Sabriel Maston Jolantru, Ken.
Jolantru to you as well. I didn't rehearse that. How's my accent?
A little rough, but you'll get there with practice.
Well, maybe that's because my audio is also a little different today. This tends to happen when we have two people recording in the same room. Unfortunately, this time it isn't you and me, Sabriel, like it was not long ago. Fortunately, we have a new guest joining the crew of the USS Transporter Lock. Please join me in welcoming sickbay orderly, Stephen Weirich. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Today. See, I did not know what the rank was going to be ahead of time, listener, so that's why I'm giggling. Just caught me off guard.
It's a little bit of a play on your real-life profession. You are, in fact, a medical doctor.
Yes. I'm a family physician.
So you spend your days just like elbow deep in people's abdomens and moving things around?
Not a surgeon.
Oh, okay. You mean that, wait, they're different?
Yes.
I thought all doctors were surgeons and vice versa.
No, and I haven't used any salt shakers to operate on anybody for a long time.
What a great reference to the original series. So is that where you got started with Star Trek?
Yes, I saw them. I saw them when they first showed in the 60s.
Wow.
Because I'm that old.
So not in reruns.
I saw the reruns later, but no, I saw it when they were first on TV in 66 to 69, 67 to 69.
No, you got it right. Yeah. And even back then, you were like, this is a great show. I'm hooked, as opposed to what a cheesy show.
Oh, no. The cheesy show was Lost in Space. So Star Trek had definitely had that on top of Lost in Space. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, and then 20 years later, TNG revives this nearly dead franchise other than the movies. Mm-hmm. And you were there on the ground floor of that as well?
Saw those also. Didn't start recording them on video cassette until probably the second or third season. I think it didn't occur to me at the time, and the first few episodes really weren't that good. Mm. But later on, in the basement, I've got a collection of, to some point, many of the latter Star Trek Next Generation episodes and Deep Space Nine and Voyager without a VCR to run them on anymore. But
I would say you probably have the commercials from those eras, too.
That's what my daughter loves. She's got the VCR now, and she's does digitizing of old media, and she loves that we have that with all the old commercials. And if there's a weather warning and there's a thing in the corner of the screen about the tornado that's coming, she loves having that up there too.
You just sparked a memory back when the DS9 series finale was airing for me. There was a tornado watcher warning popped up during the episode.
Oh, dear.
And so it's forever stuck in my head now. It was years until I saw it again without the weather warnings.
Because that actually removed part of the episode, right?
No, they put it in the bottom right corner. So a good, you know, chunk of the screen was taken up by these counties are under a warning.
That's right.
I thought you were saying like they actually broke in. We interrupt this regularly scheduled programming for a special alert. And then we resume your normally scheduled mm-hmm. broadcast, and you're like 5 minutes later. It's like, and that's who the murderer was. What? What? I have an old VHS tape from the early 80s with a broadcast of Tron and followed by a broadcast of Watership Down.
Wow.
complete with commercials. And I would love to digitize that collection someday. So you mentioned TNG, DS9, did you go on to Voyager and Enterprise?
Well, Voyager, I watched that while the others were going on because Voyager took off from DS9. That's where they launched mm-hmm. from. And when Enterprise came on, I think it was either because it wasn't a convenient time for me or I wasn't that excited about something that was happening well before the original that I didn't watch it for some time. It was several years later. Well, probably in the last 7 years or so that I actually watched it while walking on a treadmill at the gym I was at. So I got through all the episodes doing it that way.
That's a lot of miles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long road.
Yes. So after I watched it, it's like, well, yeah, I liked this. After I would have liked it how I watched it to start with.
Mm. So, and also, we are currently sitting in your home in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
I last saw you just a few months ago after I departed Sabriel's house in North Dakota. And when I saw you at that time, you had never seen any Discovery.
Correct.
And now, as of 10 minutes ago, you are completely caught up.
Yes. Well, I didn't have the subscription to Paramount Plus, but I got it around that time. So I started with Picard and watched through that. And then I thought, well, let me get through Discovery also. So I managed to get those episodes caught up and just watched like the last three before the one that airs today. Watched within the last couple hours.
So that means you still have two seasons of Lower Decks and one season of Prodigy to catch
up. I've seen like two episodes of Lower Decks, and I decided to set that aside while I got through the other ones.
Yeah, Lower Decks is a fun show. I wouldn't say it's a high priority. But you are caught up on Discovery, but you are here today because today, March 3rd, 2022, was the debut of the second season of Picard, Season 2, Episode 1, The Stargazer. It's the first Picard season premiere in over 2 years. They had to put this season's production on hiatus for a little while due to COVID. I guess about a third of the staff of 450 people on the production team had come down with COVID.
Mm.
And now they are back. They have completed the season, I believe. And season one aired today.
Season two and three are being filmed back to back.
And that will be the final season, the third season.
Yes. Yes. But let's talk about the Stargazer.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point you just brought up, because kind of like the three Lord of the Rings movies or the second and third Back to the Future movies, when things are filmed back to back, sometimes they tie directly into each other. So it's going to be interesting to see where this season goes and where it ends. But we've only taken the first step of that journey so far into seeing season two of Picard. So this seems to be picking up. How long would you say it's been since season one finale, Sabriel? Like at 2 years?
Oh, I mean, like in our real lifetime or within the universe?
Within the universe.
Oh, it's about a year and a half, 2 years.
Because we know that we lost a character a year and a half ago. It didn't happen on screen, just in the time in between. We lost, is it Zaban?
Zaban. Picard had two Romulan people working with him, and Laris and Zaban. Zaban was the guy who looked more like a modern day Romulan, and Laris was one who looked like the original series Romulans. And I love her so much.
So I don't remember if we talked about this 2 years ago, Sabriel, but there was some talk, some theory, some rumor that the two Romulans and Picard were collectively in a polyamorous relationship. Had you ever heard that?
If we did, I don't remember. Honestly, it's been 2 years. And I've been slowly going through there. If they were, awesome. So am I. But they definitely were close. I mean, I don't know if you're trying to insinuate just in general or with Jean-Luc. Like, what are you saying?
I'm not necessarily trying to insinuate anything, but I thought it interesting that this rumor doesn't seem to be too far off from where they are taking that relationship in this season, because they, you know, tried to connect those two characters in practically one of the opening scenes, romantically.
Okay, that's where we're going. Sorry, I missed the segue there. So, okay, now I can jump in. We open up with this. Well, once we get through with the actual opening scene of the pre-credits roll, we get Laris and Jean-Luc having a tender moment after the harvest is complete. And, like, it is so damn cute. I mean, we're seeing Jean-Luc looking at Laris in the fields, and he turns away and she's looking at him and even smiles a bit. And, like, there's slowly a connection there. And then here we have that beautiful moment where I actually teared up of them in the courtyard there, drinking wine and talking about things. And in the past, whether they actually had anything, I don't remember. I'm not going to lie. I don't remember. I'm still going through my season one watch through in that kind of sense. But clearly, at least in the last year and a half, that they have gotten a closer connection. They've always been, they always had a close relationship, but that closeness has gotten tighter since apparently Jaban died. And I'm here for it.
Now, as somebody who just saw it not that long ago, I just took it as it looked like they were bodyguards for him. They were friends for him, that they were close in that regard. And as far as a friendship is concerned, I can't say that I recall seeing anything that made me feel like there was anything romantic between any of them, possibly between the two that were the Romulans. But even so, most of what they discussed was their concerns about Picard is what I seem to recall. Having Picard gotten through what he experienced in the last episode of the first season, basically coming back to life, presumably she would feel more close to him because he seems like for some reason, maybe because he helped with trying to get the Romulan evacuation going, he was important to her and probably to both of them.
Yeah, I remember even having watched the first season, I could never remember if his two Romulan bodyguards were husband and wife or brother and sister, because there was a brother and sister Romulan pair in the first season. They were some of the villains. And I could never remember, wait, do we have two brother-sister pairs? But his bodyguards were actually married to each other. We just didn't see a lot that human society would recognize as marital affection between the two.
Or even just time for it. It just wasn't really time for it either, at least where they took the show.
Yeah, how do you feel about Jaban not being on the show anymore?
I'm cool with it, fine. I mean, it would be nice to have him here still, but just, they moved on, and I'm not hurt by it. I would love to see him more. I loved him as a character, but that's my feeling on it, I guess. How about you guys?
I would expect that, like a lot of things in TV series these days, that they show you something, but they don't tell you how it got there, that there will be some flashback, some pointing back that's going to happen later on that's going to explain his absence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope we haven't seen the last of... I'm sorry, I cannot remember her name. What's the name of the Romulan character, Sabre?
Laris, and you have not seen the last of her.
That's right, because you've seen Ready Room.
I mean, even besides that, she's a part of this.
Well, I was concerned when she sees Picard taking off in the shuttlecraft that was just farewell. And you're right that there is clearly some emotional work Picard has to do. And Laris is going to be a part of that. But also, if I understand correctly, she used to be part of the Romulan Tal Shiar, the secret police.
She absolutely was.
And she would be a boon to any crew that he assembles.
If she wants that, absolutely.
Right.
Gosh, so you brought up, I watched the Ready Room because I watched this Ready Room today. I even watched the episode twice. I made time for it, even though it's today, the recording, the day it came out. Sir Patrick Stewart said on Ready Room about working with, or the woman who plays Laris. He said that filming with her were some of the best experiences of sharing a scene with another actor I've ever had.
Wow.
That's high praise.
Indeed, especially for an actor as accomplished as he is.
Yeah, so I just love that connection between the actors and the characters. I'm all for Picard, Laris, shipping.
So one of the... I don't know if I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but one of the overarching themes they're implying or laying down for this season is Picard not opening himself up romantically. And we've seen him do so on occasion on TNG. There was The Inner Light. There was the episode with the science officer who played the flute, I think. Maybe Vash as well. But again, never anything permanent or serious. And maybe that was because he was captain. But now we're actually getting a lot more backstory into his character than we've ever had before. Not just that he grew up on a vineyard and he had a brother, but also who his parents were. We get to see wee little Picard in some of the scenes.
And he has his hair.
He didn't lose that until he was 13.
Now, there's also a question about, even though this was a possible future, did he ever marry Beverly Crusher?
Oh, that's right, because in the TNG finale he had.
Yes.
We have not really heard her mentioned or seen.
She was in the background, sort of, in Guinan's bar, which we got to mention there too. A picture that had been used for promotion was hanging in the wall where they cut out Troy from the picture of the three of them, took a picture for a production years ago, decades ago. And now they have a picture of Guinan and Crusher sitting next to each other. You can see the shoulder of Troy cut off. But
wow, that is as always, Sabriel, your attention for detail impresses me. Have you seen this episode twice already?
I saw it twice, but I don't see the picture. People saw it in the publicity photos for Picard season 2.
Oh, okay.
So this is in the bar where Guinan was?
Yes.
Huh. So at least we know Crusher's still canon.
But let's go to, we're kind of jumping all over the place. So Picard's love. So we'll tie that back into Guinan. I teared up when Picard showed up and Guinan saw him and they hugged. I teared up there too. I loved that scene.
You know, I knew she was going to be in this season, but in Paramount Plus, when you pull up the episode, there's always a still photo in the background over the play button, along with a little summary of the episode. And Guinan was right there. So even that for me was a spoiler. I knew she was going to, I would have preferred to not know which episode she was going to show up in.
You didn't see the thing that happened on The View years ago then.
Oh, well, that's why I say I knew she was going to be in this. Oh,
okay.
I misheard you.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw I saw Patrick Stewart go on The View and officially invite Whoopi Goldberg back to be on Picard. And she said yes. So that was not a surprise to me.
Okay.
But I would have expected her to show up in a different context than a Terran bar in Los Angeles. And by Terran, I don't mean Mirror Universe.
What context would you have expected her to be in?
Well, other than Time Zero, Part 1 and 2, we've never seen Guinan on Earth. And I would just expect that her place would be among the stars.
I could see it that way. I guess I just see, like, we see all these characters in places we don't expect them to be in. We saw a 7-year window of them, you know?
Yeah, I suppose we should expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, I saw something I forgot. Jean-Luc Picard served on the Stargazer, the original one, for 22 years before he was ever on the Enterprise-D. Like, that's a long time in that little ship. And we saw just a 7-year window, barring the movies. That's just wow.
I forgot how long he had been on Stargazer, and you got to wonder, how do you serve as captain of one ship for 22 years without getting promoted?
I mean, Ensign Harry Kim. now he learned how to be commander. Was he commander? Let's not go into that. We got a lot of show to talk about here. So, romance. He just had a disappointment. He turned down Laris. And she's just like, yep, you're just being you. And he comes here to talk to Guinan about love and that's what he really wants to talk about. It takes a little bit for her to get it out of him. But she asks, like, you know, like front right up there is like, or says like, you always use space and Starfleet and Captain as an excuse. And he even tried doing it to her and she's like, shut up. Tell me the real reason. Yeah, he's always used that as an excuse, duty above love. And Laris calls him out on it. Guinan calls him out on it. I think Q's going to call him out on it.
And there's more to it than that. Like, Guinan says to him, what is it you're not telling me that we've never talked about? And he doesn't say a word in response. And what we can infer from the flashbacks we've seen is that his inability to connect romantically, or his decision not to connect romantically, may stem from not having grown up seen healthy relationships being modeled by his parents.
Yeah. I think off camera he talked to her about it, but that pause there was definitely for us and the difficulty of the character.
Of course, in the whole Star Trek from beginning to end, the only captain that I can remember that actually had a wife and family was the captain from DS9, the
Sisko.
And he loses his wife as the whole thing starts and then does get a romantic relationship eventually. But you never hear about anything like that that's really lasting for Kirk or for Janeway. I don't recall that the captain on Enterprise had anything romantic going on. It's not a really direction they've gone with any of these shows before. But if you take a show and have it's going to be about Picard, I mean, if they'd done Star Trek Kirk years ago, which I'm sure his other other castmates would have loved, but they might have dug into some of that. But they've just always made it as part of an ensemble show, and everybody gets a little piece of action from time to time. they get their time in the spotlight for an episode, but they don't dive too deeply into their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
We saw Janeway had something pre-show and her having to give up Mark.
That's right. She did have husband or boyfriend before she left.
Yeah.
And a dog.
And a pup, yep. And then you're right. Archer only had dalliances. Michael has had relationships. Michael Burnham. And Shatner had dalliances and off-air romances with Carol Marcus. Yep.
Uh-huh. Oh, true. But not like a long-term relationship.
Right.
It's not like I'm married and I'm settling down.
For most of the captains, it's been a theme of duty first.
And I think that is a viable reason or excuse for them to not be in relationships. Oh. But with Jean-Luc Picard, we're going a little bit deeper. And I think a lot of this is informed by the actor, because Patrick Stewart grew up in a household with domestic violence. His father had PTSD.
I was thinking that during this episode too. If you haven't seen this video of Patrick Stewart talking, discussion during, I think it was a Women's Day or against domestic abuse speech, it's heartbreaking and emotional as he breaks down, which is related because I was reading this Guardian article today. I've been reading up on Patrick Stewart and all the media today. The interviewer asked him, this is related, Do you watch old episodes of Star Trek to get back into the Picard character? And he said something along the lines of, by the seventh season, the line between Patrick Stewart and Jean-Luc Picard was very thin, so he doesn't need to go back. They're basically the same person. And then when we started getting these flashbacks of his past and mentioning of parents yelling and alluding to, alluding to a somewhat abusive father. I'm like, this is exactly Patrick Stewart's childhood. And he's putting it on TV for everyone to see the struggle that he went through.
Yeah, when we saw those flashbacks at first, I thought it was a hint of something more we were going to see, like more flashbacks. And by the end of the episode, I realized we don't really need any more. I think we've seen everything we need to understand a lot about this character.
I think we're going to get more.
It also reminds me, there was a novel, so non-canon, set in TOS, all about Bones, and the Guardian Forever played a role. But the TLDR is, you saw in Star Trek V that he helped his father pass away. And I don't think this came up in the TV show, so I don't know if it's canon, but I guess Bones's mother died in childbirth.
Oh.
And his father never forgave him for that. And so Bones basically grew up believing it was his fault that this woman who he would have loved as a mother had passed away. And so that sort of created a psychological barrier, a subconscious prohibition against being in love. Anytime he met somebody and got really close to them, he pushed them away because he didn't want to hurt them. And this book helped him. The arc of this book was him realizing this about himself and working through it in therapy and finally being able to have a fulfilling long-term relationship. And I feel like even though that's non-canon, and I don't think it was a direct inspiration for what we're seeing in Picard, there are some parallels here where people have to work through their childhood to understand why they keep pushing people away.
There we get to the theme of the season, trauma. And what happens if you get stuck in it?
You think that's the theme for this season?
That is the theme for this season.
Because some people would say the theme is time travel or the Borg or Q.
That's a layer. If you get stuck in a certain time, or if you don't move past it, I mean, you're stuck in time.
Mm-hmm. And that is the final frontier.
So that's what he said. Admiral Picard is now Chancellor of Starfleet Academy.
What does that even mean? I thought like only the Germans had chancellors.
Chancellor is a head position.
Universities have chancellors.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Depends on the particular university, what they call them, but I've heard that term before.
Is it like a dean?
I don't know the equivalent of what it means. Even cities have chancellors.
I feel like a chancellor implies it's a big university. It's not just the president of the university or the dean, but it's like it's a head over all the colleges that make up the university. So he's the chancellor.
But not the president.
Not sure about that.
You'd have to look that up.
It's taken me this many years to understand the hierarchy of Starfleet ranks. And now I feel like I just opened up a can of worms with the ranks of Starfleet Academy. Oh, no.
I'm going to say we have a lot of changes for our season one people. They've all kind of grown back or fallen back into their pre-Picard days.
Yeah. Anyone in particular you want to talk about?
I mean, we got Picard as chancellor. We got Raffi as a captain or a commander. We got Rios as a captain of a ship. We got Seven back at with the Rangers. We got Elnor, who's the only one who's got something really new, joining Starfleet Academy. And Jurati is back to doing science work.
You know, you just made me realize something I overlooked when I saw this show. We've seen Raffi in Starfleet uniforms before, mm-hmm. in flashbacks. So when she showed up in a Starfleet uniform in this season, it didn't surprise me, but you're right. She wasn't in Starfleet by the end of season one.
She wasn't at the start of season one either.
Right, right. But what more surprised me was seeing Chris back in the uniform, because I know he used to be in Starfleet. I know why he quit. And it's great to see him in the captain's chair now. But I should have been just as impressed by Raffi, and I forgot to be. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad they shook it up at the end of the last season. You almost got the idea that, okay, we have our crew together now. They're going to use this ship and have adventures.
That's what I thought.
And they didn't do that. They broke our expectations entirely and did something completely different. They gave time for things to change and people to move on with other things in their life. And then the new crisis appears and they come back together for that.
So I, too, appreciate that they actually let the characters grow apart in meaningful ways. But then this creates the same problem that all the TNG movies had with Worf, which is how do you get everybody back together?
You put a big green thing in space, apparently.
Yes, and I do want to talk about that. But I also love this direction of talking about individual characters. Chris is still holding on to his cigars.
I love that so much.
Why is that?
It's just such a part of his character. It was just so fun. He always had a cigar. And you notice he had a lighter, but he never smoked it on camera. And I'm guessing that's because of American laws about smoking on screen.
Did he smoke in the first season?
I don't know if he actually smoked or not. I don't remember. Like I said, it's been 2 years for me.
He flipped his lighter one time.
Yeah, we saw him flip it and even catch it from one of his crewmates. But I can be wrong.
Maybe when things get really stressful, he actually lights up.
Yep. Otherwise, he just holds it for comfort. I mean, I found myself, holding pens before for comfort, while I'm thinking or whatever.
Yep. I had a friend who worked in Hollywood, and she said smoking is one of the best things she did for her career, not only because it gave her a way to relate to other people, but also for her own comfort, it gave her something to do with her hands at parties, which as somebody who has been awkward at many parties, I can empathize with that. My choice is not to solve that discomfort with lung cancer, but I can appreciate it.
I wish there was I don't know, I have it in my D&D games where I wish there was something that you could, I mean, vaping, we can talk about that another day. the possibility there, but like just having a very completely 100% safe thing just to have that relaxing, cool moment, not addictive, 100% safe. I would just love that.
Well, have you considered lollipops?
Can't smoke that. Well, I can, but it's not going to be fun.
And I wasn't being facetious. I was at a rest stop on the highway the other day. They were giving out free cookies, coffee, and lollipops. And mm-hmm. I grabbed a lollipop. I'm like, oh, this is great. I love these.
My desk at work, I actually have a small ball of Silly Putty that I'll sit and worry from time to time if I'm thinking through something or somebody comes in to talk with me in my office. I'll just pull it up and start stretching and balling it, stretching and balling it. Mm-hmm. That's probably my cigarette.
I think it's closest to what I have too. That are holding a pen or a putty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be awkward at parties to have the Silly Putty. So.
Yeah, I used to chew bubble gum, but...
And then you ran out of bubble gum. So you got to take some names.
Yes, thank you. I don't have to make that reference because you did it for me. Thank you. Let's see. Also, Elnor, he seems to have fast-tracked his way through Starfleet Academy.
I mean, he clearly had, you know, like prior experience to go on. I don't know. Maybe by the future, year and a half is plenty of Starfleet.
I guess we don't know how long it takes to get through Starfleet Academy and what your past experience brings you to the table when you join.
We know he's cadet, but he's still cadet. So maybe part of going to Raffi's ship is like summer, you know, like work at, you know, like intern, something like that. So, but I still Elnor's there.
I'm doing a quick check of Memory Alpha to find out how long was Wesley Crusher in Starfleet Academy. So he graduated in the year 2368. When did he leave? So you'll recall he had that one last mission with Picard where they were in the cave and he had to get water. So what year was that? It would have been 2367. So Wesley Crusher graduated the following calendar year after he started. So that would actually be consistent with Elnor. It's about a year and a half program.
Yeah. Now we can go to Red Squad because they can do anything. They were all cadets too. But that's uninteresting. Elnor, we'll get to see what he does. He has nothing really to do except for sit up and wave at the crowd and then get a book from Picard. But that was a cool little scene. It also ties back to Laris, where the morning after Picard almost kisses Laris. There's awkwardness there. She's like, I'm too old for awkwardness. But he's like, I'm looking for a book. And because he's like, oh, because he has this little pause. It's so cute. And she's like, oh, is he going to do it? He's going to say something about last night. And then he says, I'm looking for a book. And you can see the disappointment in her eyes. Then she just goes and grabs it off a shelf. She knows exactly what he's looking for and where it is. And that was just so sweet. But then this book turns out to be a book from Spock, or written by Spock, that he wants to give to Elnor. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and a first edition, so it must be like hundreds of years old, probably. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Laris knows exactly what he's looking for. The problem is Picard doesn't know what he's looking for.
There's the metaphor. Yep, you got it.
let's see. I'm sorry, since it's been so long since I saw the first season, 2 years, I'm forgetting characters' names. The robotic woman?
Dodge.
Yes. So we didn't see her get reunited with the rest of the crew. She was interacting with Dr. Girardi, but then when everybody had to go to that space anomaly, she was the only one not there.
Yeah, she was not there that we saw anyway. She's hanging out with the Deltons.
That's right. And don't the Deltons put out certain pheromones?
Yeah, they have very romantic type things. From Star Trek, the motion picture, I think that's one of the only places we really saw them, except for maybe Lower Decks or something like that. I think they were mentioned on Enterprise. That's right, I did look that up. But yeah, they are very pheromone heavy, and Ilya was very hooked up with Decker there. Mm. And yeah, but yeah, so she was on that planet. Wonder where she went.
Yeah, and just because she wasn't in space doesn't mean we won't see her again. Shall we talk about that anomaly, or are there other moments leading up to it that we want to discuss?
I like that Raffi still feels motherly towards Elnor. That was there the first season, and I like that it's still there.
Oh, and of course, anytime there's a new ship, we have to wonder what the source for the name is. we didn't have to wonder this time because we have two very prominent ships. Well, one we only saw by name, the Hikaru Sulu. Mm-hmm. I really liked that because just like I liked at the beginning of Star Trek VII, that Sulu's daughter was at the helm of the Enterprise. And how can you have an Enterprise without a Sulu at the helm? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we also had the Stargazer. And I don't recall there being a letter after the name.
There wasn't this time either.
Hmm.
Beautiful ship in its, to me, in its modern, or its, you know, new look. I love it a lot. Look mm-hmm. pretty slick.
Yeah, and it's important to note that the name of this episode is not the name of the ship. One is the Stargazer, and the other is the Stargazer.
Mm-hmm. Lots of little word plays there.
Yeah, so the name of the episode, I think, is referring to Picard, because one of the last words said to him in this episode was, look up. Yeah. And that's what he has spent his whole life doing, is gazing at stars.
And what his mother told him to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Stargazer is a beautiful ship. Seven's there, which we're going to talk about Seven in a moment here. She says that this is the first ship using parts from technology from the artifact from season one.
Yeah, I wish they had been more explicit about what technology they used, because from our superficial tour of the ship, we didn't see anything that would make it a whole new class of Starfleet vessel. We've seen ships with four nacelles before, and the only other parts we saw were the bridge, which, to be honest, looked a little bit like the Enterprise from season two of Discovery, and the corridors. So I realize that there's a lot more to a ship than what we can see in the corridors, but I'm curious to know. And I don't think it's something that we're going to find out either.
Oh, I think we're going to find out.
You think so?
I think that if they made the point of saying this ship was made with some Borg technology they took off of the artifact, I don't think they would have thrown that in there unless that has a purpose at some point.
I think it's going to have a bigger one, because at the end of this episode, when the Borg Queen is doing her Doc Ock thing, Girardi mentions that she's connecting into the Borg tech.
Yep. And in fact, minor note, we were watching it with the subtitles on, and instead of Borg tech, they wrote B-O-A-R-D.
Yes, the board. I saw it too. Yeah, I think that's going to have something, unless that was a lot of work just to get to that one little plot point. I think you're right. And I think they're going to have, it'll become important later on.
I mean, strictly speaking, the Borg, they could hack into something that's not got Borg technology in it, just because she used the tentacles to hit the different stations and start trying to take over the ship and the command of all the other ships in that area. I just think that the whole reason they would bring that up must be because there's a purpose for it later on.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to pause there. We have Seven we skipped over.
Yeah, she is still with the Fenris Rangers, and now she has the ship that was the captain's ship.
The La Serena.
That's right.
And she decided to merge together all of the holographic people.
I love it. It's so funny.
So, Sabriel, I understand you're very gay for middle-aged Jerry Ryan.
I mean, this should be no secret, even if you're not a Twitter follower of mine.
I almost replied to that, and I was like, me too. And I was like, no, wait.
Yeah, no. Jerry Ryan, Orla Brady, like, apparently I have a thing for middle-aged and 60-year-old women. They are beautiful. Oh, my God.
And speaking of actors getting older, I sometimes need to remind myself that Girardi is played by one of the same characters from Scott Pilgrim.
Yep.
Like, I love Scott Pilgrim, and she was so much younger then, and she's a great character and a great actor in either one, but it's hard for me to remember. These are the same person.
Seven Fenris Rangers merge the holograms. She's working alone, hiding from Raffi, or she is, no, more accurately, she is much like Picard, duty first, romance second.
Yeah, we were left with the end of season one thinking that Raffi and Seven are going to be an item.
They are.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for me. I wasn't sure. I mean, I understood there to be romantic interest between the two. I didn't know if the formalization of it had persisted into season two.
It's there, and there's also an audiobook, which I have to listen to, which is SARS Them, called No Man's Land, I think. And I listened to some of the audio. I did listen to an audio preview of it, and besides here. Yeah, they are very much an item. And Raffi talks about that at Starfleet Academy, too.
Yeah, she talked about how she wished that she was more, that Seven would make more time for her. Mm-hmm. And I thought Seven's failure to do so prevented them from being a couple. So I think you're, now that you point it out, I think you're right. I just assumed the worst.
But yeah, Seven has also happened to be at the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, I found that curious. And also, she didn't... I mean, maybe it's because I saw a trailer at some point, or maybe I just know Star Trek better than Seven of Nine does. But when she was on the La Serena and she put up the view screen and that unearthly green glow came back at her, like, how did she not know that was the Borg?
I was talking to my friend Char about this episode earlier. And when the anomaly first appeared and it hit the ship, irrelevant. I would have been like, Starfleet Command, there's a green spatial anomaly. It's either Romulans or the Borg.
Right. If it's green, it's got to be one of the two.
And the Romulans don't have much of a thing, so it's got to be Borg. I mean.
Yeah, and the Klingons wouldn't have that kind of technology either.
Theirs would be red, totally.
Oh, good point, yeah. So this anomaly is kind of weird. We know at one point that somebody said the Borg of that era are practically decimated. I hate it when people use that word instead of devastated, because decimated means you've removed a tenth of their power.
And to a tenth, isn't it?
Up to a tenth?
I think it's... Well, in any way, it's most people use it incorrectly.
Yes, and I would agree with that.
Janeway and here... talk in the past, and in this episode they talked about how the Borg have been basically neutralized.
Yeah, I'm sure they're referring to Endgame, the series finale of Voyager, which is now about 30 years ago, and the Borg have not recouped their losses since then. And so I'm curious to know, like, this Borg entity that is coming through this anomaly, are they time travelers? Are they coming from? This is not a transwarp conduit. I mean, I know we don't have an answer for that yet. We may not get one, but I found their emergence to be intriguing.
They're certainly different Borg because it wasn't a cube.
The clockwork gears on the queen. They're not cube or not sphere. Mm-hmm. How about the non? We saw the Borg use shapes like pyramids and circle or spheres and cubes in Voyager or shapes that were very much, basic shape, general designs. And then all of a sudden here.
We saw a sphere in First Contact, and the Borg that were individuals in Descent Part 1 and 2, they had a different shaped ship, which was then also used in the Star Trek Next Generation pinball machine. But they were not typical Borg either. So I'm curious what kinds of Borg these are, where they're from, and when they're from. There was a novel that I didn't read, but I remember like the teaser on the back of the paperback said, the Borg have evolved in ways you wouldn't expect, and now they're doing something Starfleet never anticipated. And I was like, I don't want to read the book, but I want to find out what that is. So I flipped through some pages, did some Google searches, and the answer is kill. Like, historically, the Borg assimilate. And now they're just like, no, humans are so dangerous that we can't go through jumping through hoops to try to assimilate them. We just need to kill them on sight. And so I don't know what the Borg are trying to do here. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt about wanting peace, but peace for whom? And what does peace look like?
Let's slow down to make sure everyone caught that. They sent a message saying, pleading, help us, Picard. And then repeating Article 15 of the Federation Charter, talking about getting new members. And so all of a sudden, the Borg ship emerges when Picard shows up. Borg Queen, clockwork Borg Queen? I don't know. Beams herself on and starts going Doc Ock on the ship. and starts stunning crew members when they start trying to fire on her.
But not killing them.
Uh-huh. And I think, I've not seen previews. I think there's some kind of alternate universe or alternate thing. They are breaking through Q's power of some way, and this is another version of the Queen coming through.
Well, and again, they asked for help from Picard, but not from Locutus.
Uh-huh.
So it's like they know who Picard was, and they're appealing to his human side, and they're saying, help us, which is not what you expect to hear from the Borg.
Yeah, what the Borg Queen did didn't require that Picard be there.
Yeah. So.
So, you know, there was a Strange New Worlds anthology they used to publish annually, short stories set in Star Trek. And one of them, the Borg, well, it was a short story that had both the Borg and Q. Just like we saw in this episode, we hadn't seen the two of them together since the first appearance of the Borg way back when. And in this short story, the reason that they're called the Q is because Q is short for equation, and they are equationists. And they basically figured out the mathematical formulae that underpin the universe, the very fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. And the thing was that the Borg had assimilated so many cultures and technology that they too had finally figured out the equation. And so in that short story, like the Q were actually running away from the Borg.
Wow.
And so it's very interesting to me that they're both in this episode. We know that Q introduced Starfleet to the Borg, but there, you know, there was another short story. It was a the original timeline of The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2. The Enterprise actually blew up when they tried to use their deflector dish to destroy the Borg. And therefore, there was nothing to stop the Borg when they went to Earth, and they did assimilate all of Earth. And Q, like, he had been told by the Continuum not to interfere with Earth culture anymore. And he defied the Continuum and undid that timeline and gave the Enterprise a second chance, because he said, it's my fault that Starfleet and the Borg ever met in the first place. I was trying to push Picard and the Enterprise and Starfleet and Earth to evolve better. And if they get assimilated, they can't do that. So I'm responsible for this tragedy and I need to undo it. And the Q Continuum, who had told him not to, said, good, you're finally taking responsibility for your actions. So I'm curious to know if maybe some of that is in this episode too, where Q is like, wow, the Borg really screwed you guys up. I need to give you a better chance because this is my fault.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
I do find it interesting that of all of the, I mean, again, having just absorbed all of this new Star Trek over the last month or two, I do find it interesting that of all of the pointing back to things from the original series, so far, that was one glaring absence, and that was anything about Q. So I guess they're digging in there to give us something to the old fans to enjoy and the new fans to pay attention to now that they've got them both involved again.
I mean, the last time I think that Q mentioned a Borg, he was yelling at his kid, saying, don't mess with the Borg. Maybe this
do not antagonize the Borg. I love that.
When Picard was reciting his very easy password for self-destruct. The song "Non Je Ne Regrette Rien" was playing. If you saw Inception, you heard this a lot. But here, "No, I Do Not Regret Anything" was the song playing. Was that something that they were playing over the speakers, or was that purely to set the scene? Some of the characters seemed to be reacting to it, some didn't.
I didn't notice anybody but Picard reacting to it.
And
I think either it was in his head or it was something Q was doing.
That's what I was thinking, because of course, mon capitaine. Like, he loves the French thing too, making fun of the Picard name or Jean-Luc's French history. So that's what I was thinking, it's a Q thing. But like, even watching it twice, I like couldn't be 100% certain if others were reacting to that song or not, but he was for sure. But the others didn't quite seem that way.
Yeah, I am curious not only about that in that final moment, but also the Queen said to him, look up. Now, yes. Because Picard had once been assimilated by the Borg, they know everything he knows. And so they're familiar with his family history, so they could easily quote back to him. But the question is, why would they do that?
Yeah, so I'm thinking that this, I don't know, I think somehow this Borg version of Borg Queen knows current Picard's thoughts and troubles. I don't know how. I'm going to, once we're done here, I'm going to go watch the previews to see if they mentioned that at all. Yeah. I intentionally avoided them, so I wouldn't accidentally reveal anything
maybe
today.
Maybe Picard's mother was assimilated.
Nah. And it's his he would have known that.
That's true, because he used to be Borg. Maybe he would know. I feel like the Borg's intentions here are far more complex than either Chris or Seven of Nine wants to believe.
Yeah, Seven is much kill. Shoot to kill. Shoot to kill.
And I certainly don't blame her. And I also don't think it's the other end of the pendulum where this could be the greatest ally Starfleet ever has. I don't think it's that either. But the Borg must know that whatever, if they have actual sincere intentions here that are not malevolent, they must know that their way of going about it is not going to be well received by Starfleet. They've assimilated enough Starfleet officers that they should know what the response would be, that the Stargazer would self-destruct.
Yeah.
So if they want something from Starfleet in a collaborative fashion, I don't understand why they went about it the way they did. Oh, well.
So at the end also, series must be over, right? Because the Stargazer's destroyed and he's in some other time period.
I want to show this to somebody and just stop the episode 5 minutes early and be like, that's it. That was just the epilogue to season one. Thanks, all.
You know, Janeway has connections to Q, too, at her death, which is kind of amusing. And I wonder how much of it Kristen Byers. Like, I wonder if I could just borrow some of that story here. It's not going to be the same story at all, but it's already diverged.
You're referring to a novel?
Yeah. I don't remember what it was. I've read it. I just don't remember. Janeway's continuing story, the Voyager continuation. So is Picard going to have to romantically love someone to save the universe this time?
I think those two things will happen, but not in the order you just suggested.
I mean, Q loves his little games, and which I love that little age up scene.
That was clever.
That was fun.
Yeah, I first saw that. I thought he can't still be that young.
Well, I thought if they're gonna. I mean, I'd seen the teasers. I knew he was older, but I also thought it's going to be expensive to keep up that de-aging special effect for an entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you only see it for like a flashback, like in like Patrick Stewart in one of the X-Men movies.
I don't know. They did it in Book of Boba Fett a bunch.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
With the character, so.
Okay.
It's not easy tech and it still kind of stands out, but they're getting better at it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's been around for over a decade now. Part of me wonders why when Q was first heard, Picard's response was no, 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 no. Because most of Q's appearances have actually been beneficial, like Tapestry. That was entirely for Picard's benefit. And also, Picard knows he just initiated the self-destruct. If he's not dead and it's thanks to Q, he shouldn't be saying, oh, no. He should be saying, oh, thank you.
Yeah, but Picard has always disliked Q and his meddling.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly can't blame him for that. Q is a pain in the butt. But his intentions are not always malevolent. He's more like, actually, he's better than the DC character, Mr. Mixyas Pidilek, if you're familiar with that character.
I could never pronounce it, but okay.
Anyway, that character is bent entirely on mischief, and he never does anything good. At least Q has a good streak to him, especially after that episode where he was human.
maybe Janeway helped Q grow up a little bit, but Picard's never had a fun time when Q is involved. Even if it taught him lessons, he messes with the crew. He makes Q or people kill things, make people be merry men when they are not merry men. No, Picard is not happy to see Q ever.
Well, remember at the very end of All Good Things, he actually did say thank you to Q.
Uh-huh. Doesn't mean you like him. You can respect.
Hmm. And also, he's gone now 30 years without seeing this guy.
Uh-huh.
He must have known that the reprieve was not indefinite.
I mean, he died. You hope. He made it like, yes, I died without having to see him. Ah, crap.
The one face you don't want to see on your deathbed.
Or after it.
Right. Before, during, or after.
He already did that once when he got fatally stabbed and Q took him in different places. He says something about, I am God, is what he said, I think, at that time.
Congratulations, you're dead. So what else about this episode? Anything cross your mind, Steve?
Awkward long pause.
Nope, no.
No, I would say from this episode, it set a lot of things going that were unexpected. As I said, I kind of expected we'd have a little merry crew together after the end of the previous one, and they didn't. A lot of stuff got fixed, obviously, at Starfleet with Picard that were not good when the Romulan pretending to be a Vulcan was running things there. And then ending up with hearing about some of Picard's backstory, and you've got this disaster going on, and then suddenly he's in some other time where there's a portrait of a rather military looking portrait of him on the wall of his own chateau, and some sort of a synth type person as his servant rather than his Romulan friends. You know, clearly something's wrong with that, and they've set up a very interesting set of puzzles to show us then over the next season.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed at first, actually, about what we're learning about Picard. You remember Tom Paris and Harry Kim used to play Captain Photon on Star Trek Voyager. And again, that Strange New Worlds anthology, there was a short story where Harry Kim programmed or reprogrammed the antagonist, the holographic antagonist, to have a backstory. And he's like, oh, the reason I hate you, Captain Photon, is because when I was a child, my father didn't love me enough and blah, blah, blah. And Harry Kim did it as a joke, but Tom Paris was furious because he's like, the reason I play this hologram game is because it's black and white, literally and figuratively. With the rest of the world is too complicated. But in here, I know who the bad guy is and what to do about it. And if I find out that the reason he's a bad guy is because his father didn't love him, then things get complicated. With Picard, I kind of always liked that he was just this sterling example of what a Starfleet captain can be and should be. And now we're learning, oh, his father didn't love him enough. And okay, that's realistic. And there's still a lot more I need to see about this season. We're only reviewing the first episode today. So I'm not saying I was disappointed. Maybe that's not the right word. But my initial impression was, is this necessary for us to know about Picard? And I guess for the direction they want to take this season, it is. But I've never found myself longing to know this part of him.
One other thing came to mind. Wasn't there some scene that flashed quickly when Picard is having his flashbacks of being a child and going into that plant room, whatever you
conservatory
call it.
Little thing.
The conservatory thing, and there's the broken glass on the floor. Wasn't there something that looked like his mother got stabbed with that glass, with some of that broken glass?
Yes.
So I guess she didn't get assimilated. She maybe got stabulated.
The very technical term.
He's a doctor. He would know.
It's what we say in doctor talk. So
I appreciate you not treating us like like we don't know what you're talking about and using the actual terms.
That's right. You know, don't talk down to our audience. We know what you mean.
I have to hand me a stabilator when I got a patient and then I don't like
it. Great, reminded me not to fall under your ministrations. Anyway. What are some of your closing thoughts?
I'll do rapid fire. Picard, once Admiral's like, hey, these people are trying to talk to you. We don't know who they are. He sped off on the fastest shuttle out of there, leaving Laris behind without a note. And she loved, but the sad little scene of her watching him speed off was heartbreaking. Picard showing up at Guidance with wine. He tries to mend things or share his wine with whenever he can. He did it last season. He does it here. And they share hooch. I mean, all these fancy wines and drinks of the galaxy, and they want the cheap stuff. I love it. I love Jurati's line saying, you look absolutely positronic. That was fun. Let's see. I also wrote, because I did not notice, I would not have noticed, I have not seen this show, but apparently there is a Star Trek Adventures RPG actual play podcast called Clear Skies, and their ship, the USS Ross, was actually in the background in front of the anomaly.
Yes, I actually wanted to mention that because this was tweeted by Bonnie Gordon. That is her ship in Star Trek Adventures. Uh-huh. So she's basically now canon in both Prodigy and Picard.
That's awesome. And Star Trek Online artists made four ships from the game are now canon in the show because they did some work for the show. Mentioned Seven has lost Serena. Oh, let's see. We talked about Picard's and Stewart's last connection there. Yeah, that's what I got. I highly recommend watching this week's episode of The Ready Room. It has Will Wheaton interviewing Sir Patrick Stewart. It has a scene with Whoopi Goldberg, plays Guinan, talking about her getting on the show and the importance of seeing Uhura on Star Trek. And I found out that Guinan is named after performer and speakeasy businesswoman Texas Guinan.
I did not know that.
I didn't either. Mary Louise Cecilia Texas Guinan.
Wow.
I did not know that until this little bit. But yeah, I highly recommend Ready Room. I paused at the end, the very end, they start showing a preview. So I'm going to go back and watch that. But before that, there is a little thing talking about producers and Guinan talking about Ready Room that are safe to watch. Or about Picard, excuse me. But so the preview is highly warned, and so it's safe to watch.
That's really cool. I'm still kind of stuck on Texas Guinan. She has her own Wikipedia page. She was born in 1884, died in 1933 at the age of 49. Oh, and also, brief tangent, Steve and I, when Picard started today's episode, we were trying to figure out how old Patrick Stewart is now. He's 81. And we know this is going to run for three seasons. So we hope he sticks around for one more.
Oh, they're filming already or done already. So.
Oh, that's right. And one thing I want to say about this season, broadly speaking, is I was disappointed in what they did with the Borg last season, which was not enough. And they've already brought the Borg back in this episode. I don't know if that's too soon for more Borg, but I already like more what I'm seeing compared to last season.
Good. Oh, speaking of the Borg, the music change and the intro change has Borg all over it. Much more heavy music. It's way different intro than last season.
Yeah, Steve pointed that out also. Discovery makes subtle changes every season, but the music is still the same. I got the feeling that today, the intro sequence and the music were both quite different.
Mm-hmm. Like the DS9-ification or Enterprise-ification of the theme. Quick, add a beat to it.
Well, one thing you two have in common is that once you're familiar with the opening sequence of a show, you tend to skip it. I never skip the intro to any show. And so I look forward to this new variation being indelibly seared into my memory over the next 13 iterations.
I'll have to see it a few times before I feel like I want to skip. So,
The show opened with Time is on My Side, sung by Irma Thomas. That's not a clue what's coming up in this season.
Because it's not Star Trek without Q or Borg or spatial anomalies or time travel? And why not have all four in one episode?
Weren't there some tachyons too? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so many tachyons. Yeah. Multiple tachyons.
Watch out for the phase inducers and all that.
The power couplings and the deflector dishes and the RAM scoop buzzards.
I got a little.
Sounds like I'm making it up, but I'm not.
I got a little kick out of the ships flying around picking grapes, beaming them off the vine at the start.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The future of wine production.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I think that's it. Steve, I guess I should have mentioned to be clear about a potential conflict of interest. Not only are you a medical doctor, you're also a published author.
So I'm told, yes.
And tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, I have written a history of the Apple II computer, thus the connection with Canon, our Apple II enthusiasts at Kansas Fest every summer. Mm-hmm. Published the book a few years ago and still selling it. And you can get it off of Ken's Juice GS website.
It's true. So that's where the conflict of interest is. I am one of the distributors of your book. You can buy it on my website. And you were so eager to come on this podcast that you were willing to trade 1 month's revenue of commissions to come on Transporter Log.
That's right, because that's going to be a big donation for you.
So if anybody wants to follow you online, we've talked about where to read your book, but are you anywhere else that you want to promote?
I don't tweet very much. I mostly just lurk and read the things other people have tweeted. Not really. I've got a website for Apple2history.org, and that's with the number 2 in there. And that has basically got the earlier versions of my book listed there and on a really rickety website, but it still works.
Well, websites are like pets. You need to constantly maintain them. You can't just leave them alone.
Yes, and I've been leaving mine alone. It still works, and that's about it.
It's kind of like when you boot up Animal Crossing after a long time. You feel guilty because you've been neglecting all the people and property.
Yes.
And so it's better to just not boot it up and not look at it. But great. There will be links to all of those in the show notes at transporterlock.com. We didn't really talk too much about what we expect to see in future episodes. Any like one or two sentence theories or guesses or hopes, Steve?
Well, I watched the thing after the end of the episode, so I shouldn't say anything.
Have you watched the preview, Sabriel?
Again, I did not. I was intentionally waiting for today, but I shared my hypotheses already.
Remind me again what that is.
Oh, not one. I shared many. Picard has to romantically fall in love to save the universe. Borg right. Queen might be from another place because they've got a clockwork Borg Queen. Just a few more I've forgotten already. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that I have any. I did watch the trailer when it debuted a few months ago. And in fact, I think it was at Kansas Fest 2019, the Apple II convention, which was the last one held in person before the pandemic, when the trailer for Picard season 1 debuted. And I watched it in the conference room that everybody was in. And people were like, why is Ken screaming? And I'm like, because it has the Borg and it has 7 of 9. And oh my God, oh my God. I was very excited, very surprised. And I think I need to take a page from the book of a mutual friend of ours, Sabriel, which is to not watch any trailers ever. It's something that I've historically been good about with some things. Like I was able to see the latest Spider-Man movie without seeing any trailers. So I was totally blown away by some of the scenes. I literally jumped out of my seat and said, holy crap, in the middle of the theater. And it's been since the 90s that I've stopped watching, coming next week on Star Trek previews. But I kind of wish I hadn't even seen the trailer for season 1 of Picard, because some things are already spoiled for me. And I'm sure there are going to be a lot more surprises that I don't know about.
And I guess I don't look at it as being spoiled. I mean, it depends on how well somebody makes a trailer. There's some movie trailers that if you've seen the trailer, you've basically seen the whole movie. Yeah. I know that happens. But I also feel like, oh, that's how they got to here. When I see what happens in the actual movie or the actual episode that shows a thing, and I find out how they got there. And a well-made trailer doesn't show you all of the pieces of the puzzle. I think with Spider-Man, there was one photo or one sequence that they were showing, and they didn't show that in the one they released on purpose. They managed to blot them out so they wouldn't see that in there. although everybody kind of knew it was coming.
I didn't. And I also avoided all the trailers for Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. And after I watched the movie, I went back and watched the trailers, and they basically told you this certain character was coming back. And I didn't know that going into the movie, so I was totally surprised by it. I thought it was really handled poorly, but I was glad I didn't know that going in. So as our mutual friend said, Sabriel, trailers are for to sell people on the show, and if you're already sold on it, you don't need to see it. So, but it was Star Trek. I just couldn't resist. I needed that. I needed my hit. So. But anyway, that's been Picard Season 2, Episode 1. We will be back to review all those. Also, this week is the first time since 1999 there have been two new episodes of Star Trek in the same week. So
different series.
Different series, yes. So Transporter Lock will be back soon to review the latest episode.
Ones we're talking about, like Prodigy. Didn't that come out with Discovery too?
Prodigy, no. Discovery took a hiatus. I think Prodigy debuted in the fall, ran for five episodes. Then Discovery started, ran for like 8.
Don't worry. I'm just picking nits. It's okay. I didn't mean to sidetrack. Sorry.
No, this is fine. This is a very compelling outro. This is our... We need to do a preview for next week's episode to make sure people come back. So stay tuned for a lot to hear more nitpicking about Star Trek Discovery.
Oh my God, I don't want to nitpick any more nits. But
Steve, it's been great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's been great. Great to be here.
And until next time.
Seize today, for we know nothing of tomorrow.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes and keep your hailing frequencies open by following us on Twitter at TransporterLock or subscribing to our podcast and email newsletter at TransporterLock.com.